Heroes are literally everywhere in today's society. It seems as though a month doesn't go by before there's a new superhero blockbuster on the movie theater screen every single month. We seem to need heroes today, now more than ever. And undoubtedly, there's heroes that walk among us even right now. We love and admire them deeply, those heroes that come out of nowhere, that push our stalled car off the road, the ones that give us a jump when our battery dies, the hero that makes a difference in line when you need it at the very last second. But the question we ask today is, what makes a hero so, and how do we boost the heroism in ourselves? Welcome back to the podcast. So far, it's been the summer of interviews at the Inclusive Activism Podcast, and that's been a very good thing. I know you've heard the interviews from Dr. Matthew Whitaker and at this time Luke Black. So I think by now you might have even heard from the executive director of Anytown, Eric Tanchez, by this time. So I'm curious, how are you liking these interviews? Are they good? Are they of value? I also have three other interviews that are coming up in a few, so sit tight if you're enjoying those interviews because I feel like there's a gold mine of stuff out there and I really think you're going to enjoy it. I also asked because the individual topics still seem to dominate in the rankings at this point, so I'm kind of hoping to hear your thoughts. So as of today, I want to give you a quick check-in on how the different podcasts are doing. Right now, at 89 total listens, is Interrupting Liberal Elitism, 72 is Mandatory Self-Care 2017, 69 is Cannot Compartmentalize Social Change, 64 is Interactional Versus Relational Thinking, 60 is The Opportunity of Being Your Own Worst Critic. 58 is Inclusive Activism Orientation Part 1. 57 is Dr. Whitaker Part 1. 53 is Inclusive Activism Orientation Part 2. 53 is Interview with Dr. Whitaker Part 2. And at 46 we have Fragility, How Weakness Gets the Best of You. So that's kind of a sense of where things stand and where they're at right now. I thought that I might check in with those totals because I thought that might be of interest of you. Also, the reason I asked that question is it still seems as though the individual topics dominate the rankings at this point. So I'm hoping to hear from you and hear what your thoughts are. So remember, you can email me at inclusiveactivism@cox.net. That's inclusiveactivism@cox.net. Or you can leave me a voicemail at 860-576-9393. Again, that voicemail line is 860-576-9393. That's the Inclusive Activism Hotline, and I would love to hear your thoughts. Also, remember to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher, and then those 5-star ratings do make a significant difference. And if you don't have the ability to do those things, you can share the podcast on your social media of choice. All these things go a long way to making a significant difference for us here at the Inclusive Activism Podcast. If you can remember to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play, or whatever your pod server of choice is, these are great ways to show my proof of work to potential sponsors. It would go a long way in helping getting my producer, mother of two, who is a global traveler at this moment, paid for her work someday. I know the last podcast she did, she had to stay up all night in order to get the Luke Black interview to you, so I'm looking forward to helping her with some of those costs. Also, there's costs with the websites and things like that, so your assistance with this is going to make a huge, huge difference. I haven't done so much with the activism lately. I've been away on vacation. I am looking forward to getting a little bit more involved. I'm going to be taking my friend Dr. Adama Salu out to dinner for her birthday weekend, so I'm looking forward to that. And this next weekend, I will be going on Emerging Leaders 2 retreat and talking about nonviolence. And I'm really looking forward to that because there's some folks that this will be really new concepts to, and I'm hoping to see how well I can communicate the opportunity of being a nonviolent person to folks that have had to live with and deal with violence on a day-to-day basis. Very, very much looking forward to that. I'm going to be gone Thursday through Sunday, so that'll be great, and I'm looking forward to the opportunity to get to do something like that. My self-care is getting back on track. I've eaten really good this last week. It's been nice because on vacation I eat whatever I want. This last little bit I've been eating really healthily, which has been really nice. And just yesterday I went to one of my favorite locations called Naked Barbecue, and they do a special prime rib, smoked prime rib, which is really, really delicious, and I lucked out, and that was there, so that was fantastic. So I got to treat myself a little bit, but then next week we're going to be looking at getting back to the desserts of fruit with a little bit of stevia on top, just so I can kind of get back to feeling like myself. You know, too much of that stuff is definitely not good, and I want to kind of move into that direction a little bit more. But yeah, with that, I am just really happy to kind of get a little bit of normalcy under my belt, and I'm really looking forward to that EL2 nonviolence retreat specifically. It's usually 3 days, and so this is going to go about 4 days, so I'm excited. I'm going to get to go to Alpine, Arizona, which is on the edge of New Mexico and Arizona, so it's going to be nice to have a little bit more time away. It's right there, really close to a lake at a pretty high elevation. It's supposed to be nice and cool, so I'm going to check on the weather again up there on Monday to kind of see where it's at. But the lows should be low 50s, and the highs I'm hoping will only be high to mid 70s. Last week I saw a low 80s. That might be a little hot for us, but we're going to be living in community and we're going to definitely figure that out. So with that, on to the podcast for today. I got excited thinking about this topic specifically. So what is it that makes a hero? How does an ordinary person go from making ordinary choices to extraordinary choices to become the hero? That ordinary to extraordinary thing is the thing that makes a difference between a regular old person and a person that's a hero for other people. And if every person is actually capable, then what can we do to draw a little bit more heroism out of ourselves? So the first thing that I wanted to get to talk to y'all about this is that heroes see voids of need much, much better than the rest of us. They see the world differently than we do, and they also take a little bit more personal ownership of the outcome of how the world will be and their role in making the outcome of the world as a sense of personal ownership, which is really neat. That's something that I think differentiates someone that's just a regular old person to someone that wants to be a hero, or takes on the responsibility of being a hero to others. So while we might drive past the person stranded on the road because we don't want to be late to work, the hero decides to stop and be late anyway. The hero in them calls them to help. There was a study done on preachers, and they were asked to do a sermon on the story of the Good Samaritan. So the parable of the Good Samaritan is a story told by Jesus in Luke, and it's about a traveler who has been stripped of clothing, beaten, and is left half dead alongside the road. First, a priest comes by, and then a Levite comes by, but both avoid the man stranded on the side of the road. Finally, a Samaritan, and Samaritans were definitely despised back in the day. Both Samaritans and Jews despise each other, but it's finally the Samaritan, again the lowly Samaritan, that stops to help the injured man. Jesus is described as telling the parable in response to a question from a lawyer, and that question is, "Who is my neighbor?" In response, Jesus tells the parable, the conclusion of which is that the neighbor in the parable is the man that shows mercy on the injured man, and that is the Samaritan. And it kind of just gives a sense of this idea that we need to be helping and be of help to those around us and make a difference for those around us. And the people that take on the responsibility of making a difference for those around us, that is the person that makes the most sense. The person that should be seen as most high when looking through a Christian religious standpoint. So it's not the priest, it's not the Levite, it's the Samaritan that stops to make the difference, that changes the narrative of who is the neighbor and why should we help. So priests were asked to do a message on the story of a Good Samaritan, and they were supposed to deliver this message to a congregation other than their own. So these preachers were then told that they were late to deliver the message, and on the way, they had passed a man who was groggy and asking for help. The difference in whether the preachers helped or not had nothing to do whether they were going to be preaching on a message about the Good Samaritan or not. It was a sense of hurriedness. The amount of hurriedness that the preachers experienced had a direct correlation in exactly how helpful they were. So I'm going to read these results to you a little bit so you understand more. The amount of hurriedness induced in the subject had a major effect on the helping behavior, but the task variable, went on the way to talk about the Good Samaritan was the task, did not have much of a difference. So overall, 40% offered to help the victim. In low hurry situations, 63% helped. In medium hurry situations, 45% helped. And in high hurry situations, only 10% made a difference. Now, as far as messaging, right? So if there was a helping relevant message given, 53% stopped. If it was a task relevant message, it was 29%. There was no real correlation between religious types and helping behavior. The only variable that showed some effect was religion as a quest. Of those people helped, those who saw religion as a quest were less likely to offer substantial help to those who scored low on this statement. But later analysis revealed this might not be the cause of any real religious differences. So some of the conclusions that kind of came about of that study is, ironically, a person in a hurry is a much less likely to help and stop people, even if they're going to speak on a parable about the Good Samaritan. Some literally stepped over the victim on the way to the next building. So these results seem to show that thinking about norms does not imply that one will act on them, and maybe that ethics become a luxury as the speed of our daily life increases. Or maybe people's cognition was narrowed by the hurriness and they failed to make the immediate connection with that of the emergency. And a little bit more about this study. Many subjects who did not stop did appear aroused and anxious when they arrived at the second site. They were in conflict between helping the victim and meeting the needs of the experimenter. Conflict rather than callousness can explain this failure to stop. See, the hero, like what we're analyzing here, right? This hero person doesn't just have something on their mind that makes them more likely to help. They actually see and experience the world differently. And that is part of that rarity. There's 10%, and even when they were in a high hurry, these 10%, these hero folks, are the ones that stopped. These 10% saw a difference and took on a responsibility to make a difference in a different way than everyone else did. And I don't know that that's just they're a special magical person, or if they went through special situations that made this a conditioned response. So we're going to talk about the heroic conditioning experiment in a little bit, but obviously something about these folks is a little bit different. And the magic is that there is no magic, that this is a practice. So when you stand up for what is right, when you have this ability to see voids of need, that's what I call the ability to help, is there's a void of need, and these folks that step up to fill this void of need are folks that don't allow certain things to happen without feeling compelled to make a difference. So for example, you as inclusive activists, when you commit to stand up and don't allow certain comments or certain stereotypes to fly or be allowed in your presence, that act of stopping and doing something is where the hero arises. It is a training of mind to not dither, and it focuses one's own ability to do something rather than just doing it without thinking. So it's conditioning oneself over and over again to create this thinking. And then once you're conditioned to look for this response, you're more likely to act on it. So the second thing I wanted to talk about to you in the podcast today is that if this is in fact a trainable skill, then we need to make heroic acts of bravery much more of a daily priority. We need to step up and make the difference in which we are capable of making. We must own our power to make the difference in the life of the person or peoples around us much more often in a variety of ways. So another way in which this kind of comes about comes from the story of the Stanford prison experiments done by Dr. Zimbardo, where people were conditioned to dehumanize one another based on situations and circumstances. So rather than call each other names, prisons were called prison numbers, and guards were only called guard. And this create really strong us-thems that happened in that space, and this us them really made people dehumanize and hurt one another. And it was really funny because when Abu Ghraib came about, Dr. Zumbara was not surprised at all, because this us them role play thing that happened at Stanford definitely mirrored what was happening in Abu Ghraib prison, where many of the atrocities that happened to some folks that were in prison there reproduced themselves all over again. So if you're in higher education, and if you've ever had to do or you know what an IRB review board, this is because of the results of that horrific study. What a lot of people don't know is the person who stopped that horrific story, because that story is not told as much. But I'd gotten this from a podcast from Tim Ferriss when he interviewed Dr. Zumbardo to talk about just interesting things. So I do recommend the Tim Ferriss podcast when he interviews Dr. Zumbardo if you're interested in diving deeper into this topic specifically. But I'm going to tell this story that I'd heard from that podcast. So it was Dr. Zumbardo's girlfriend. She was a grad student who stopped by to have lunch with him. And actually, when they were talking about what had happened between the two, or what was happening in the experiments, she was utterly disgusted, and she threatened to break up with him if he did not immediately stop the experiments. And this is no small thing. It wasn't like their second date. She was in love with this guy, but she said, if you are this person, and if you don't change who I believe you to be in this moment by stopping this, then you're not the person that I want to be with. If he did not stop immediately, she was going to break up with him and be at great personal loss in this moment. So there's two things that are really important here. One is someone saw something wrong and stood up and took action. She saw that void of need. But the second thing that she did is that she was also willing to sacrifice something too. That's something that's important, right? You see the void of need and you make the sacrifice. Sometimes the sacrifice is going to be being late to work. Sometimes the sacrifice is going to be a mild inconvenience. Sometimes the sacrifice is going to be building one's courage to say something, to confront a stereotype that happens within one's presence. Or maybe the sacrifice is you're seen more as that guy or that girl or that person that always says that stuff about inclusion that really drives people bananas. So I have another small example of this that actually happened on vacation while I was up in Wisconsin. So on my vacation, my niece, who is still in the first grade, had an opportunity to play the hero too. Again, she just saw something, she felt something, and she did something. So here's a little bit story about this. My parents live in a three-level house that was built about in the 80s. And I will tell you, some weird stuff has happened in that house. My brothers and sisters feel as though there was a little girl spirit that might have lived in the house when we were back in high school. It's a dark, kind of like scary place. And the darkest, scariest place in that house, because it is in the middle of the woods, in the middle of nowhere, is the basement, of course, right? The basement is unfinished. And a lot of like old stuff down there. My stepfather used to do some taxidermy, so there's like taxidermied animals down there, right? So you kind of see the picture I'm painting here. It's not like warm and welcoming in that space, right? And it's just not just my little niece that's afraid of that basement. My niece that's in high school definitely avoids that basement as well. So a lot of avoiding happens in the basement. I've lived in that house, so I've kind of become accustomed to some of those things. I'm no longer afraid to be in the middle of the woods in the middle of the dark. And I'm not afraid to be in that basement anymore, because I had to go in that basement to feed the wood-burning stoves to not freeze in the middle of northern Wisconsin in the middle of winter. So my mother had asked me to go downstairs and put some food in the freezer. Now, I've had some great exposure therapy in the darks in the woods from living there. So I was kind of like walking around the basement, kind of taking a trip down memory lane, seeing what was all down there. So I just kind of like lollygagged a little bit down there. So obviously, while I was down there, I think my niece went down and was looking for me, because I think she felt I was taking a little bit too long for her comfort. Now, normally when she goes down there, she goes down there with only all the lights on, and then there's like a middle landing that gets you halfway down to the basement. She normally won't pass that middle landing area, but she was all the way down at the bottom of the basement and on the basement, cold basement floor, kind of asking for me, looking to see where I was. And I turned around the corner, and there she is standing with a little yellow wiffle ball bat with her. And at the time, I really didn't think much about it. But I'd come to learn later that she had taken her bat down there to come to help her uncle, right? So I'm a bigger guy. I'm a 5'9". I go about 200 pounds. I've been weightlifting since 23. I don't know how to fight a lot, but I definitely know how to fight better than a first grader with a wiffle ball bat. But that didn't stop her from coming down and checking on me. And my mom was a little bit puzzled, and she asked where my niece was, and she said, "Don't worry, Grandma, everything's going to be fine. I've got the bat with me." Isn't that special? I mean, the fact that someone that's that afraid of something would take a second, go grab a bat, and go down further into the scary basement than one would ever deem necessary just to kind of check on her uncle. That's a hero moment, right? That's one of those overcoming the fear things. So in that instance, the void of need is Rowdy's taking too long in the basement and I'm scared. The sacrifice is that you're gonna go grab the wiffle ball bat and then you gotta go past that first landing to get all the way down to the bottom of the floor. And then even when you don't see Rowdy in that scary area, you gotta ask to try to get him. You see that difference, right? You see the void of need, you have the sacrifice, and you go past that sacrifice to go to make a difference. So last story I wanted to tell about this is I have two dogs and both couldn't be any more different. One absolutely loves and adores the water and loves to swim. And actually, when I get done with this podcast, I am going to go hang out in the backyard of my partner's parents' house and take my sweetie dog Tank swimming just because he just absolutely adores it and it's something that matters a lot to him. Now, my other dog hates the water. Utterly, deathly afraid of it, and whenever she sees anybody swimming, she's convinced that everyone's drowning. So she paces around the edge of the pool all the time, and she tries to grab people by the neck or, you know, whatever she can grab with her mouth gently and try to, like, pull them to safety. So she sees Tank, and Tank's swimming around. He's doing his thing. That's the dog that loves the water. And he's closer to the steps, and she sees him swimming around. And again, she hates the water. I can't undersell how much of the fact that like she's not a big fan of this water. I can't really anchor that enough for you. So not only does she see this happening, she jumps off the edge of the pool. Again, she's never done this in the 8 years that I've owned her. She's an 8-year-old girl. She jumps into the pool, and not just jumps in, she dives to the bottom looking for him, right? She dives to the bottom trying to find him, trying to save him. And there was no thought there. There was just action. Now, she actually is a little bit better of a swimmer because she swims like 1,000% and she kind of has more webbed feet than my other dog does. But she just doesn't like the water. She hates it. You know, that hero moment was, oh my gosh, my people aren't doing well. I'm going to jump in and I'm going to make a difference. So she jumps in, she dives to the bottom, and she tries to get him, right? At this time, he's already on the stairs and everything's fine. But she didn't know that at the moment of choice, right? In that moment of choice, there was no hesitation. She saw the void of need. My partner puppy is, I think, drowning. And he's going to be at that bottom of that pool unless I do something. The sacrifice is, I hate water. I'm afraid of water. But I'm not even going to think about that because I see a need. So the sacrifice is jumping, not just jumping, but diving, looking for him at the bottom of the pool to try to do something differently. And so the last story that I have isn't so much about bravery specifically. It's about seeing and seeing the world a little bit differently. So recently I met a friend at the gym and I have a lifting partner, which is just awesome. It's been great. It's been a wonderful week, a wonderful sore week this last week because I've been being pushed a little bit more and I've got someone to spot me on the last couple reps. Again, I'm going to be doing a podcast very soon on the pain threshold and how do you push past that stuff. But my friend at the gym had seen me and pushed past his uncomfortableness to say, hey, you know, I could really use a lifting partner. I really see you here. You're focused in. And, you know, it's just more fun when you got somebody working out with you, kind of co-pushing you and you're pushing each other. You do a little bit more than you would otherwise. So we'd been working out for the past week and there was this guy and he was kind of talking to us, asking if he could use the bench and stuff around us, you know, kind of being around, seeming to be available. So me and my workout partner were about to finish up and I said, you know what, man, we should go over talk to that guy and we should have him work out with us too. So now the sacrifice there was small. The sacrifice was slowing down enough to ask this guy if he wanted to join us to be part of what we were trying to do. But the seeing things differently was the part that was important, right? Because we could have just seen that as an interaction, right? Instead, we looked at that as a relationship. And since we saw that as a relationship, we were able to do something about that a little bit differently because we saw him and saw his need to belong, saw his attempts to connect, and we reached out to him so it wasn't awkward to him. Do you see how each of these people saw something a little bit differently? They saw the world in a different way, and they made a choice to make the difference they could. They made a choice to make a difference. And it's not about the size of the choice. It was about making that choice despite that cost. And that, my friends, is what makes and creates the hero. Now, lastly, the last point I want to make is that heroes can be made. Now, I'm not talking about the narrative that goes around where we say create a hero, our hero worship things where we're trying to create narratives around what should be a hero or how we overvalue certain heroes in certain ways, right? Like teachers used to be heroes, but now only police officers and firefighters are heroes. Now teachers are, you know, money-grubbing parasites that suck off the system. Now, I don't know if that's fair. I remember my teacher as a hero. But anyway, these created narratives of heroism are, I don't think, necessarily helpful. I am talking specifically about trying to find the hero within you. So let's be honest right now. The world is not a bright, awesome, fair, and lighthearted place right now. We are living in a space that's filled with doubt and lots of uncertainty. There is incivility everywhere, all over the place, wherever we look. And it feels more and more like the gap between us is widening. We need to focus more on that gap. Because the more we see distance, the more we create separation, the more we get focused only on us, the more and more there will be a dearth of the hero. So what we need to do is challenge ourselves to pick our head up and be the hero for one another and reach across that gap of separation. We need to try to make that difference. One of the great ways to do this is to stand up when people stereotype one another. The moment of having to be that person, while admittedly uncomfortable, creates a sense of liberty and freedom for this person that you unshackle from this notion of stereotype, and it makes people get to be their whole and best self in that moment and not have to speak up for themselves. You could be the stranger that doesn't do it because it helps you in any way. You get to see the void of need in that moment, step up and do something about it, and make a difference for someone that's getting boxed into an expectation of being something versus getting to be who they really are. And so how do we start this? Well, I think the biggest thing that we need to do is to start practice looking for voids. We need to slow down and make the choice to make a difference. When I was talking to my friend Eric the other day, he goes around and just tries to encourage people at the gym that he works at called Lift. He doesn't even train so much specifically anymore. He just works out and he will work out and train with people in order to kind of give them a little bit more like Eye of the Tiger or personal feeling of progress or showing how they're making a difference just by trying harder. And so he was working out at Lyft and he came across this guy, and he's a black guy, right? And in Wausau, Wisconsin is a very white area. He comes up to the black guy and he's like, "Hey man, what's up? How's it going? How are you doing?" You know, has a positive conversation with him and then kind of goes on about his day. Months later, the same guy kind of comes back to him and says, "Hey man, I wasn't feeling really connected here and I was feeling a little alone and a little isolated. And the fact that you came over and talked to me and made me feel good about being here and made me feel like I belonged here made a huge difference to me." Do you see how that difference does something for someone? So one way I try to do this myself, how I try to train myself to see voids, is I try to look and see trash when it's on the ground. Now, this is not because I'm some major environmentalist or because sustainability is the passion of my life. I mean, I like clean spaces and I like nature, but it's not my personal burning issue of the day. What I do is I like to pick up the trash and throw away the trash because I saw the trash and because I have the capacity to do something about it. No matter how busy I am, no matter how late I am, no matter how stressed out I am, I saw that trash and somebody can pick up that trash. And I can be that someone. And I want to be somebody. And the world needs these somebodies. And it can be anybody that rises to the challenge of being that somebody. And I can tell you this, when we rise to the challenge of being someone for someone else, or being in community with someone else, when stepping up and making a difference, that's the person I want to be. I want to be someone that can make a difference for someone. I want to be someone that matters. You know, I want to be someone that cares, that helps, and makes the world a better place. I mean, at my job, I am honestly just blessed and highly favored to get to work where I work. I get to be in this wonderful, positive place where people are coming to do something different, where they're coming to change their lives. So instead of being the people that they were, they're getting an opportunity to be the people they want to be. And I do them the favor of trying to see who they could be and treating them as such. Like, I treat them like their potential best selves. And honestly, man, it's freaking magical that I get to do this over and over again, right? Because where I work and within the spaces that I try to live in, it does not matter who you are. You can be an addict, you can be an ex-con, or you could be, as one of my former students put it, a former asshole. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to me who you used to be. To me, it matters who you want to become. And how will you choose to matter for someone else? It's much like the actress Lily Tomlin once said, somebody should do something about that. And then I realized that that somebody was me. Let's not just be somebody. Let's help one another. Let's be the hero for one another. Let someone be your hero. And look for someone to matter to today. So in review, the final major points of this podcast were: heroes see the world differently than we do. They see voids of need. 2, we need to take a sense of personal responsibility with the voids that we see. These small acts of bravery are mattering. We all have the time to do something with that. We all have the ability to make a difference with this stuff. And 3 is we can practice this. We can train the hero response. We can do hero conditioning for ourselves, and we will live into our best selves and who we intend to be. So with that is all I have time for today, and we have voicemails. So let's hop into this voicemail by Nia right now.
Hi, Rowdy. This is Nia calling in. So my question was basically directed towards diversity. Is it actually wanted or is it needed in the United States?
Wow, so wanted or needed? Needed for sure. Wanted, I think definitely we can kind of argue about, but you say because after this, so I want to let you expound a little bit more.
Because I was looking at a poster that Teen Vogue had created, and on the poster it was an African-American girl and a Caucasian girl, and the African-American girl was straightening out her hair and was bleaching her skin, while the Caucasian girl was tanning her skin and curling her hair. So where the basis of like this whole question came from, I was in like a law office here in Arizona, and they had a poster and it said Arizona accepts diversity. And I thought that was kind of funny because as long as I've been here, there's been so much discrimination that I've seen from other races other than Caucasian. So for that poster to say that it welcomes diversity, I was just like, I think you may accept it, but you don't necessarily want it. So that's why my question was basically like, is diversity needed or wanted in America? All right. Bye.
All right. To your question specifically, is diversity wanted or needed? I do think it's needed. I mean, that's definite. There's no question. I think diversity is definitely needed within the United States. Now, is it wanted? I don't know that everyone's awake to the need for diversity or the value of diversity specifically. I think it takes people going through a special, like an event. People will talk about their woke experience. I do think people do need something to be woke to understand the need for diversity, because otherwise it's really easy to just relax into one's privilege and just enjoy the privileges you have. So I know you, Nia, and you are a black woman, but you are American, right? So you have some American privilege going for you. Until you're surrounded by international folks, I don't know that we know the value of Americanness or your citizenshipness. And I know you've done the Comm 101 diversity class with us, and you got exposed to folks that have DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. And that's kind of where you become more aware of your privilege status with your American citizenshipness. And I don't think you would want to give away your citizenship, but you might find yourself using your agency as an American citizen to make a difference for those folks that do have DACA, knowing that the fear that they live through, you being black, of course you're going to be experience a lot of lack of welcoming of diversity. You being a black woman, you're going to experience even more of that. But when you see the struggles of folks that are DACA, you are kind of shocked into action and you want to do something about it. So I think it does take someone awakening another to see the value of diversity, really. It's definitely needed, and I'm going to do a podcast in the near future about systems and why diversity's love and need and value systems in the near future. So do know that I'm going to expound on this question in the near future. But thank you so much for calling in, Nia. I really appreciate that. So if, like Nia, you thought of something that in this podcast made you think and you have a question, you can always call me at 860-576-9393. And again, that phone number is 860-576-9393. I do have an outgoing message there. So if you do want to call in and let me know what you're thinking, I would appreciate hearing from you. I really love like stopping and pausing and talking about the voicemails. And the other thing is, as you can see with Nia right here specifically, now I'm going to be making a podcast about the need for diversity and inclusion within systems specifically. So if you have a critique, if you have a question, or you want me to come up with a longer response to a question you have, I'm more than happy to do that. This place is a space for you to hit back, to ask me questions, hit me with scenarios, and kind of react to situations real time. And again, I do appreciate the back and forth that we kind of have in the community, and I'm really looking forward for the option and the opportunity to do more of this. And lastly, as always, please subscribe to us on iTunes, subscribe to us on Google Play, or whatever pod server of choice you use. And also, please rate and review us. You can rate and review us on Stitcher. You can rate and review us on iTunes. Those 5-star reviews go a huge, long way to make a major difference for this podcast. And I can tell you, we had an amazing last week. About 150 downloads, which is an all-time high for us at the Inclusive Activism Podcast. And we're moving towards a way of making this podcast more sustainable in the future. So again, if you're feeling as though you're getting value out of this, share the podcast, rate the podcast, definitely subscribe to the podcast. And as always, you can email the podcast at inclusiveactivism@cox.net. That's inclusiveactivism@cox.net. You can email me and I'll read your email out on the podcast as well. And as always, if you're interested in booking me or Sarah to bring the power of inclusive activism to your organization, you can do so at inclusiveactivism@cox.net. And you can learn more about me, Sarah, and this organization at www.inclusiveactivism.com. That's all I've got for today. Thank you so much. I hope you appreciate the podcast, and I'm looking forward to talking to you in the near future. Bye. We'll be right back.